They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WEBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. You're on the Commons, I'm Sue Bartholomew, and joining me on the Commons today, I have my old friend. I always have a lot of fun with Bill Davis. Bill, thank you so much. You're always there at the last minute, always ready, willing, and eager. Can I say
hello,
eager? Hello, Bill. Thank you. Thank you for joining me. How are you?
Thank you for inviting me. It's good talking to you.
It's always fun having you on. So a lot has been going on in the HOA world. A lot of people across the country seem to be buckling down and planning on going to see their legislators, either to block stupid legislation or to ask for legislation. Good idea, bad idea?
To go to a lawyer to seek to...
Legislator.
Get legislation.
To go to a legislator.
I think you need to do a little research before you go to the legislator. You know, we had one here before we got, you know, soundly defeated that claimed he was protecting homeowners and tried to conceal the fact that he was the owner of one of the largest HOA management company organizations in the United States. His interests were not exactly aligned with homeowners, and the problem with many legislators is they're, you know, how are they funded? Here, there's a lot of development going on, and developers like having absolute authoritarian control over subdivisions that are being developed, and the legislator is going to go to who's lining his pockets, as far as I'm concerned. So I would do a little research before I went to go ask help from the legislator as to who is that legislator likely aligned with.
Is it a good idea to have laws on the books, or if we took away all the laws and said, all right, Constitution applies, contract, strict contract, don't give HOAs more laws, don't tinker around the edges, nothing has helped us, go away.
Well, I think the laws often get compromised to benefit the industry folks.
Yeah.
As far as no laws, there's a number of... I mean, inherently, you're going to have a nonprofit corporation law. You're dealing with an entity that's a corporation, so it's not a natural creature. It's a creature only of law, and so there inherently have to be some laws governing it. But I would agree with you on, constitutional principles. And by that, I mean constitutional principles, not purely contractual ones. Because if it's only about contract, then you can supposedly contract away anything, or worse, have somebody else deprive you of, you know, fundamental property interest in the property that you currently have, take it away after the fact. And that's one of the problems with this silly collectivism idea that other people can vote to remove your right to use your property. If you take somebody else's property, it's normally viewed as actionable as either theft or conversion or something along these lines. There's nothing magical about voting to take somebody else's property rights away. That just shows intent. There's nothing that should otherwise make it okay. You paid for that property. And this is not a government. This is a private organization. I don't know if that answered your question, but I tried to.
Yeah, and you always do. I mean, I love talking to you because one of the things we can go out in the Jingwings doing weeds and sort of think about different things and come up with different things. One of the, all right, if you look at the reason for having an HOA, it's the only reason you have an HOA is to provide the municipal government with free taxes, right?
Well, that's the local government's reason, but that's not the developer's reason.
No, the developer's going to build it. I mean, quite often in a lot of places you have the mandates, and the mandates are for the government's benefit because they don't want to do anything. They want to collect taxes, but they don't really want to do anything for those taxes. Make sense?
Right, but I mean, so even if there wasn't a law, the developer's going to want to at any rate, because by setting up the HOA, it shifts liability over to the HOA. Now, the HOA is going to be controlled by the developer, but the developer gets to say, oh, it's not me, it's the HOA, and if you don't like the decision that the HOA made, you have to sue the HOA, not the developer. The HOA also provides a mechanism that's beneficial to the developer's financiers, because the restrictive covenants and the bylaws, especially anything built in, you know, the last several years or even by statute, allows the HOA to borrow money, and guess who the only people obligated to put money into the HOA are?
The homeowners.
Somebody other than the developer. But that's beneficial to the developer and the developer's banks. And the ability to control any and every improvement that's made on the property, even after they've sold it, that doesn't benefit the homeowners. That benefits the developer. Again, it's like you purchased a house, but your house is merely inventory for future, you know, use that benefits the developer. I'm just putting a caveat on it because I think it depends on from whose perspective. The city or local government wants it to avoid, you know, providing fundamental governmental services. The developer wants it because it gives them a complete, total authoritarian control over anything done in the subdivision and is a source of financing for the developer's operations or the HOA or the development.
So, look, if we separate out all kinds of stuff, first of all, the developer's going to come in and the developer's going to put in the infrastructure and build the houses. The cost of that infrastructure is passed on to the homeowners, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
He's going to collect his money. Once the development is built, he is gone. And that should be part of the law. Out here,
they got these, they continue to try and saddle you with economically unregulated forced consumption of resources like water or internet services, like force you to have to buy internet services from a particular provider that, you know,
that's because
provides a kickback to the developer.
That's because they've got the vehicle bill. What I'm saying is if we don't provide them with the vehicle, if we just have the developer build the houses, put in the infrastructure, build the houses, sell the houses, and once the last house is sold, he is gone. There's no benefit to him, right? So you're going to have homeowners who say, well, I want to walk to the pool and I want a tennis court, and that's fine. You have companies, private companies, who come in, and the developer can do it. They can come in. They can buy the land from the developer, however it works out. They can put the pools, they can put all the recreational facilities in the neighborhood so the homeowners can walk there. And if you want to join, you join. You're not all forced to join. Your houses are not held hostage to make sure that this pool is well maintained. So if you have people who know what they're doing and they're business people and they do this on a regular basis, they're going to sell you membership. They're going to maintain the pool. They're going to allow you to walk to the pool. They're going to allow you to walk to the whatever. And everybody else is off the hook for that, right?
And if it's not a good business decision, you're not going to find any takers on that.
Absolutely. And for the developer, people don't want HOAs. If you look, there was an article in the Washington Post. And if you look at the comments, over and over and over again, people say, I will not buy in an HOA. Problem is, they don't have a choice. because the local municipal government mandates them. Then the developer comes in and takes over and says, oh, well, we'll do this and we'll do that and I'll stay forever. And we've given them the vehicle to be abusive. Give the consumers what the consumers want. If so many consumers don't want an HOA, then build stuff that doesn't have an HOA. There are plenty of idiots out there who are going to buy into one, willingly and knowingly. That's fine. But don't force it down everybody's throat.
Right.
Then you wouldn't have to tinker around the edges to keep this thing afloat, right?
Yeah, I think if people had choices, there wouldn't be so many of them picking them.
And then you wouldn't have the problems with the neighbor deciding that what mailbox you can have, what flowers you can plant, what color your front door is, what the door knocker must look like. I mean, we get into the minutia. And then they have the power to fine you and to foreclose to collect that fine.
Well, we both disagree that they have the power to fine, but we're forced to have to litigate that in court. And the only reason we have to even have that fight is because of the existence of the HOA to begin with.
Despite the fact that in Virginia we have the Gilman case, the legislature went ahead and said, HOAs, we give you the power to fine, provided that the homeowners approve it. So they do have the statutory authority to fine. What they can't do and what hasn't been litigated is overrule a Supreme Court decision, and that's what they've done. That's what they've done. So the HOA attorneys say, well, yeah, you've got the right to fine, as long as it's in your documents. You can amend your documents. And they did that in my association a few years ago, just for parking. But what they did was they held people's parking spaces hostage. To make them, they did.
So they extorted a vote.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So now there's a thing that for parking only they can find. It's in there. But the argument, and I'm not an attorney, but the argument goes back to the courts or the legislature doesn't have the authority to overturn a Supreme Court decision. But if you take it beyond that and you go to Foley, and in Foley it says it's a constitutional argument. It says that the legislature does not have the authority to give associations powers they themselves don't have. That's an unconstitutional delegation.
Right. And here the argument is going to be that that's inherently a governmental power, just like I believe it was either Gilman or Foley found the same thing. And, you know, there's not four branches of government in this state or any other state. There's legislative, executive, and judicial. And an HOA is not any one of those, nor is it all of those. It's not a legitimate – there is no fourth branch of government, and yet they – you know, this industry seems to think that you can agree that they are all of the above. That's just not the case.
So where do we go from here? You and I agree. So we ought to maybe rule the world?
I think we need to step away from the rulers. No, I mean, well, I'm litigating. So I, you know, I'm trying to... you know, they don't want to agree that they don't have these powers. You have to fight them, and that's what we're doing. And we're going to keep pushing along. I mean, it's been well established for, you know, hundreds of years that penalties in contracts are unenforceable. And something can either be an unenforceable penalty or it could be liquidated damages. But for liquidated damages, there has to be some... you know, indication that there actually would be damages. And an HOA corporation is not harmed by grass being, you know, a half an inch taller on one lot than it is another. The HOA corporation is not harmed in any way whatsoever. It can't show that it ever would be harmed by something like that. So I believe that fines are unenforceable penalties. And we've all heard that these are contracts, right? Sure, haven't you had that just told over and over and over again, this is a contract? Well,
yeah.
if it's a contract, then you don't get to have fines in it. And that's where we're going with it.
I like that argument. But here's what's frustrating, Bill. If you go back to Gilman, Gilman was litigated in 1982. That's what, 36 years ago?
Yeah.
35 years ago, however.
Well, your math is better than mine.
It's 35 years ago, actually. And we're still fighting the same fight. We're still arguing the same argument. We're still tweaking it. We're still twisting it. We're still standing it on its head. We're still arguing different facets of it. You win in court, and 35 years later, you're still fighting the same fight.
Right. Well, we didn't really see, I just wasn't familiar with that stuff 35 years ago, but I don't think it's the whole fining thing really came into being until, the industry trade groups started lobbying heavier in this state, but I didn't really see it in all the deed restrictions I've looked at. It doesn't really seem to have come into being until the late 90s here.
Yeah. That's when they decided, here's where we're going with this. No, you're right. You're right. And that's where they started getting the powers, and that's where the industry started lobbying big time.
Right.
That's where
claiming they had the power. Yeah.
Yeah. But in the Gilman case, it was an industrial condominium, and they went after Gilman. And again, they wanted him out, so they started fining him some outrageous sums. And remember, we're going back 36 years ago. Now, it probably doesn't sound quite so desperate, but back in those days, that was pretty hefty.
It was. As I recall, it was a huge number, and even the court pointed out that it was just arbitrary. It was really little more than a right to decide who was allowed to live there, and they don't have that right.
So one of the things they're doing is they're not calling them fines because of the Gilman case. They're calling them charges. They're calling them assessments. But in Gilman, the court said, nor can a fine be disguised as, and they went through a whole list of things. So they're still violating the spirit of that case, because the courts were very firm on that. They said, you cannot disguise it. You cannot name it something else. Well, CAI will tell you, don't call it a fine. You can't fine people. But we can charge people.
Well, they're pretty blatant here, because the older ones talk about calling it a special charge, and then they just got downright blatant and called it fining, and even incorporated, started putting restricted covenant provisions, claiming authority to fine in the restricted covenant to all the newer ones, and they call it fines. And you can't get much more blatant than that's a penalty. If you're calling it a fine, that's by definition a penalty.
And so you've got basically two arguments. If they say, it's a contract and you agreed, well, then you've got the contractual argument. You can't do that in a contract.
Right. It's an unenforceable provision. And I don't know if you have a lot of this out there, but here there's a lot of these declarant-controlled subdivisions. And conveniently, actually, it doesn't matter if it's declarant-controlled or not. Of course, fines never apply to the board. They're inherently immune.
Yeah.
That's part of being a member of the elected or appointed class of the board, is that you never have to worry about being fined, foreclosed upon, or really even threatened for the most part. So it's always a weapon to be turned against anybody else. But the developers, they use fines to It's good to be the queen. That's the best I can say about it.
You know, I think I'm not 100% sure, but I think that there's a law that in Virginia, or I know it's in some states, that the declarant has got to get out. They can, you know, once a certain percentage has been sold, or as long as they've been there for a number of years, or as long as there's not,
right.
You know, they've got to go. They play these games, though. They'll hold on to some lots just to be there. But I think a time frame. I mean, if you go in and you get and you get a permit to develop this, I think you ought to have an estimate of how long it's. You should know how long it's going to take you to build 100, 1,000 homes, whatever it is. And
right. Well,
you provide.
Florida put in a specific term for a while. I think it was like 10 years, and then that law was changed or eliminated. Texas has one that's toothless. But what they'll do is they'll say, oh, in fact, when I moved into my subdivision, we were told there's 233 lots, actually fewer because people are buying lots and merging them. So there's, you know, going to be fewer. And the bylaws provided that the developer turned over control when 80% of lots were sold. Well, the problem with all that is it's illusory on two grounds. One, the developer in our case, as you know, you learn these things through experience. It's not something you know right off the bat. That's why so many people get caught off guard with this stuff. But the developer has the ability to unilaterally amend the restricted covenants and the bylaws. So it really doesn't matter what it says because they can change it to suit their needs. You know, it may have said 80%, but then they can say, well, after we've sold 99%, there's no number. Or so long as we own one lot, we retain control forever. But on the percentage ones, what typically happens is it looks all above board on paper, but unbeknownst to you, they're going to add phase two, which adds a bunch more lots and changes the, you know, the total number that you need 80% of now. Then they'll add phase three. You know, ours was like seven phases before it was done, and it's not even done now. Added an entire new section. So I was told in 2001 that turnover was imminent, and here we are 16 years later, and there's no indication it's going to happen in the next decade.
So once phase one is complete, then they have to turn that over and divest themselves of it before they're allowed to move on to phase two.
Yeah, I don't know how that works when you got interconnected roads and infrastructure, but I agree with you in principle. However, just to be clear, there's a presumption here that it's somehow better for that there's a right person that's in charge. And my position is no, there's not a right person that's in charge. But to be honest, most of the time, not all the time, I'd rather have a developer in charge than a homeowner because the developer at least has a business idea that they're not trying to get caught up in petty lawsuits. They want to get in. Their idea, they're clearly money oriented. When it's homeowners, it's about personality, desire to harm, the thrill of threatening other people, getting enjoyment out of threatening people with foreclosure and all these other types of things. And you have all these other like psychological problems entangled in with it. So I don't think that homeowners are necessarily any better. If what you meant is we don't need no stinking HOA here anymore, yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, you said that the declarant was still in control and could unilaterally amend those governing documents, and that's true. But if phase one is done, you said then they go into phase two, phase three. But once phase one is done, they can't touch that.
I mean,
they cannot make any amendments once they have sold every lot, and they cannot move on to phase two until phase one is finished. And the minute they've sold it off, they're out of there. They cannot make any changes if the homeowners want to make the changes, they can. But there's no HOA. The homeowners can get together and say, you know what? Having gray mailboxes is a stupid rule, a stupid covenant, let's get rid of it. And they can get together and do that.
I can go for that.
Because that way that'll protect the developer's interest while he's building it, right?
Well, except the developer's going to want to retain complete aesthetic control over everyone else's property while he's there.
I don't care what he wants.
While it is there, I'm saying.
Yeah, stage one is done. It's finished. They're gone. And if they want to move on to stage two, they've got to finish it. They can't hold one lot and move on to stage two and stage three and stage four so they control it forever. They've got to get out. But you know what?
I like that.
You know what, Bill? You can also do it, and you know, you can also say you cannot make these changes for a period of 5 years, however long he thinks it's going to take him to do stage two or stage three, and that way he still protects his interests without making gross changes, and then he moves on. I mean, there are ways of giving everybody what they need, not what they want necessarily, but what they need, and still maintaining the dignity of the homeowners.
Okay.
Does that sound right?
I think there's definitely a better way than what is happening right now, because there's no dignity, no rights. You spent a mint of money on this property, and then more restricted covenants can be imposed on you after the fact, or more obligations could be imposed on you after the fact, and you don't even necessarily have any authority to vote, or if you do, your vote is mathematically irrelevant. And I think this has given too many other people an interest in the property that you already purchased, you know?
Your own. That's right. See, I think there's a better way of doing it. Everybody says, oh, they're not going to go away, you can't do anything about it, and that's what it is, and, you know, you just have to add more laws and add more rules, which is just making it much more difficult. I'd like to strip. Just take things away. So we'll listen to
everybody.
We listen to everybody. Everybody has needs. You know, and I'm certainly not going to try to make life miserable for a declarant, but I'm not going to let him make life miserable for everyone else. So give him what he needs. And move on.
Well, that would take care of the developer. Then you're still stuck with the local government trying to stick one down your throat.
You know what? They work for us. We don't work for them. And it's high time they realize that.
Well, but one of the problems with the new subdivisions, there's nobody there to vote or say anything. I mean, the people are, what I'm finding here locally is what's happening in many cases is the county commissioners, I don't actually live in a city, I live in an unincorporated area, and in Texas, cities have certain powers. They could do anything that's not prohibited by the state. Counties only have the authority the state grants them. But what they're effectively trying to do is use restrictive covenants and their ability to control the development process, because plats have to be approved by the county, in order to effectively create specific ordinances that only apply to people that live in a particular area. And that's just wrong. Either the ordinance should apply to everybody or not. But it's a way, you know, there's no way the general public would have tolerated the type of restrictions that the county is trying to, you know, have developers agree to impose on some of these properties. And it's not legit for an ordinance to only apply to a specific area of a county. Either it applies to all or none. But what they've done is try to privatize, try to do things that the county is not even allowed to do under Texas law, which is to create ordinances in this fashion, and then privatize them by having them embedded in restricted covenants. So the county effectively, you know, and by the way, counties here have the ability to enforce restricted covenants. So it's allowing them to create private laws way beyond what they're, you know, beyond the scope of their constitutional authority under the Texas Constitution. And it is troubling.
You know, every state seems to have a little bit of a weird thing. I mean, in Texas, Houston has no zoning laws, so they say, oh, we have to have HOAs. I think there are a lot of places, older places in Houston that are really nice that don't have zoning laws, that don't have HOAs, and everybody seems
to... Right.
You know, it just works. I've been there, you know.
The no zoning is such an absurd argument. You know what? Restrictive, the HOA is geographically limited in territory, and you can put a gas station right next to it at any rate. So the idea that it's somehow that you need an HOA, and by the way, you can have restricted covenants without having an HOA.
Yeah.
So, and frankly, Houston has more of these voluntary associations than any other place I'm aware of. They're not mandatory HOAs. They're voluntary
Civic associations.
And you know what? When they start treating people badly, then people say, we're not contributing a dime to your organization.
Right.
But the lack of zoning is not an excuse to have an HOA, because zoning is a territorial use restriction. Well, an HOA doesn't have the ability to prevent anything outside of the boundaries of the land, the restricted covenants burden at any rate. You can put a gas station right next to the HOA. You can build a 30-story skyscraper right next to the subdivision. There's no, HOA doesn't have anything to say about that. The argument doesn't hold water for me.
No, it doesn't, but, there's all this fear-mongering. Oh, my God, if you don't have an HOA, your neighbor's going to paint his or her front door red, or they're going to have their car up on blocks. And so it's this fear-mongering, oh, my God, we can't have that, and therefore we've got to be subjected to the horrors of an HOA. And the same thing happens in Texas. Oh, well, you got to have it because you don't have zoning. Every other city in the world has zoning, except that Texas doesn't have zoning. And if you don't have the zoning, and somebody might put a slaughterhouse right in the neighborhood, you know, nobody's going to do that. It's just insanity. A gas station in the middle.
There's still restrictive covenants. I mean, as long as it's a, enforceable restrictive covenant, I mean, you can't expect to enforce anything if it's not. But, I mean, if the restrictive covenant covering the same territory says this isn't permitted, then no, those things can't go in there regardless of whether there's zoning.
Yeah. No, but it's the fear tactic. Oh my God, you got to have it because somebody's going to put a gas station. Right, any businessman is going to put a gas station at the end of a cul-de-sac where nobody drives by. You know, anybody gasping on their last drop of gas isn't going to go rummaging through a residential neighborhood at finding something at the end of a cul-de-sac. It's so stupid.
Well, what's even crazier is they come up with arguments like that, and yet the new, I would call it trend because it's not anything I'm interested in, but, the trend in development for at least the last, all the newer ones are these mixed-use developments.
Yes.
So they have stuff like that in them anyway, and that's all they're building is out here, the front of all the subdivisions has all this commercial stuff in it, and then the homeowners have no say about what goes in there, but the developer does, and it's just kind of silly because they're trying to sell the homeowner on some idea of control. The reality is the homeowner is being disenfranchised from having any say or control because it's either going to be an HOA or it's going to be the developer, and the homeowner's told he needs one or the other of these for protection, All that's happening is the homeowner is being disenfranchised from the ability to say what he wants to do with his own property. Because, as a practical matter, the developer wants a higher price for the commercial property because that's the only place it's going to be allowed. And they don't want competition from homeowners after they've sold the land to them, where the homeowners might be able to have some type of commercial operation in the same area. So it's just not, The idea that they're protecting the homeowners or that it's somehow preserving value for the homeowners is just completely backwards. The homeowners were not at the table when the restrictive covenants were written or when they're modified. That's all done for the benefit of the developer and the local government, who are the only ones at the table when that was going on.
You know, there's this smart growth movement, and the idea is that you're not going to have a single patch of grass anywhere because you're going to build things and they're going to look like cities that in Europe that have been developed over centuries. Not, you know, it's not this artificial, we're going to come in and build it and you're going to like it. They have some wonderful little names like pedestrian friendly, you know, and
walkable,
a traditional neighborhood, and all of this wonderful horse baloney. In 2001, the Washington Post did an article on me and on my show, and they called the Fairfax Public Access, where we broadcast from, they said it was in a seedy industrial area, and that's exactly what it was. We had right across the street, no, seriously, right across the street you had these big so chain link fence open areas where tow trucks would store the cars that they stole, and they'd be parked over there. They would there were other areas where they had you know, a big machinery that was stored. They had wild and vicious dogs, so if your car was stolen by some stupid little tow truck driver, then and you found it, they had dogs that would just attack you. And that's the kind of area that this was. But they decided to change it, which for a while I used to call it the newly gentrified area. They took all of that stuff out. They've put in pedestrian friendly. It's a nice neighborhood. They have all these stores. They have all kinds of things. No parking, but, you know, well, they do have parking garages, but it's, you know, parking's difficult. You really have to walk, so carrying stuff from one end to the other is not always feasible, or not, you know, especially when the weather's crappy. It's just not the best thing in the world to do. But yeah, we live in, I'm in one of those areas right now. It's no longer a seedy industrial area. It's sort of made of cardboard and plastic and scotch tape and looks very nice. But it's okay. Not, you know, it there's nothing solid about it. I mean, they want to compare it to Paris or London. Those were built hundreds of years ago. They're solid. They're not going anywhere. They're not going to fall. They're not going to fall off. But here you've got plastic mullions that sort of melt in the sun, and they kind of fall. You know, it's garbage. It's absolute and utter garbage.
Right. And not to mention that people have these romantic expectations of things, and yet the infrastructure built that long ago, you know, they didn't have air conditioning, decent sewer systems, decent, you know, we have expectations for water, sewage, electricity, cable, internet, gas, you know. Yeah,
all of that infrastructure needs to be upgraded, but the fact is that the buildings themselves are still standing, and they're showing you the outside of the buildings. And they want to do that. They want to replicate that. But they're not. It's just junk. Everything they're building is garbage. Very expensive garbage. I mean, right next door they have these. It started, I think, at 800,000. And they look like shipping crates that are on standing up. I mean, it's... Anyway.
Well, not to get politics too far into it, but I have to wonder, you know, we have a president now. The problem is he is a developer, so he may not feel the same way about some of these things. However, if you look at condos are different than I'm going to differentiate between condominiums and HOAs, especially HOAs regarding detached single-family housing, or I don't even like calling it that, just detached housing. There's no need to have this kind of, you know, burden and nastiness on people. And, you know, he's indicated that he's going to fix things for the middle class, and I think this is one of the areas maybe he should target.
I completely and totally agree with you, but can he do that from the federal level as opposed to Houston doesn't have, we're going back to
you
the local municipal, yeah?
You know what? I absolutely believe he can, because the federal government plays such a huge role, or federal instrumentalities play a huge role in financing for the housing market.
The financing, yes. And that's why we have CAI. By the way, that's why we have CAI.
But, you know, yes, they can impose constraints on the type of property that will be financed. And I realize that homeowners will not have the ability to make those changes. Consider the transfer fee ridiculousness. The management companies are imposing those. Associates out there lobbying why it needs to be able to, claiming that the homeowners approve this and want this, which is an absolute lie. but it is. It's an absolute lie.
Yeah, I know.
And, you know, the federal government comes back and says, no. We're not going to invest in any loans that have these transfer fees, including the management company transfer fees. Those management companies are still demanding those transfer fees. Right now, it has not harmed homeowners because the FHFA is not enforcing its own rules. But when it does, what authority does the homeowner have to say? They don't want to pay it at any rate. But you've got this unscrupulous management company claiming, this is an industry-wide practice, claiming an entitlement to a rent-seeking charge for phony services. It's already being paid by the HOA to maintain the record of, you know, who's where and this kind of stuff. But when that starts interfering with people's ability to sell their home, who then should pay the price? I think it should be the HOA and the management company. It shouldn't be the homeowner. So I guess that's coming on the horizon.
Interesting times ahead. I think I would be not looking to add more to this. I would be trying to strip the powers. I mean, really, let's just get rid of all the powers that people have.
I agree. Well, I think the FHA was trying to curtail it, but it's not the homeowners that have any control over it.
Yeah.
The people that are being saddled with the obligation don't get to say no or yes, huh?
The homeowners don't understand what's going on. You know, they buy a house. They're consumers. They want a house. They want four walls and a door. They want some space that's all theirs. They want to be able to raise their family. They want to go there. They want to, you know, that's where they celebrate. That's where they recuperate. That's where they raise their family. That's their safe haven, except that it's not such a safe haven anymore. And they don't understand. They don't want to get into all of the nitpicky stuff. They don't need to understand that. You know, we're just complicating things, and then they're lied to. Oh, well, you have to have this, because if you don't, then your property values will go down the tubes. Oh, really? Sounds like you don't really believe that, do you?
No. I've been working hard with the realtor for the past year trying to find non-HOA property, and, you know, the temptation is, you really want to get moved and settled, and then so you're going to compromise and buy one of these disgusting places. And I look at the HOA places. I'm in one now. I've had friends that moved into some of these places, and the turnover of them is incredibly high. It's hilarious. They sell themselves on everything that they're not, like community. Are you kidding me? They couldn't be more anti, you know, community if you tried. Property values, please. Nothing could be further from the truth when you can steal 100% of the equity in somebody's house through fines or foreclosure and all this other nonsense. But, you know, we're looking hard for one, and what we're finding, and the realtor or real estate agents that we're working with, is especially out here, people do not want that. They want non-HOA property with a little bit of land around them, And the non-HOA property, it's sitting on the market for like a day. The same day that it's out there, they're not only getting list price, but they're getting
more.
The house before this one that we put an offer on, it was bid up $30,000 by the very, we were offer number two. We put an offer in within a couple of hours of it being open for seeing. Somebody else beat us to the punch, and the first offer offered $30,000 over the list price. That's the craziness you see out in the Bay Area or something like that. Not in little bedroom communities, you know, outside of Austin, but the people are putting a huge emphasis on non-HOA issue. They're paying a premium. The sellers are benefiting from that, and you know what? They don't have to share any of that with these scrupulous management companies or the people running the HOA.
And
it's their money. It's their house. They get the benefit. It's getting a premium because it's not in an HOA, and the seller gets to keep that money. So.
And there's a lesson for the developer. Developer, give your clients what they want. Give your clients what they want. The housing consumers are your clients. Don't force something down their throats that they don't want. Build them what they want. And now we've got to get around the local municipal government because they're the beneficiaries.
Right, but the newer restricted covenants that I'm kind of seeing, it's almost like it's kind of like price fixing, except it's not necessarily, price is part of it, but it's really, you know, among the development community, what we're seeing is these new restrictive covenants are providing that when you buy a lot in here, you have no claim against the HOA, you can't sue the management company, you agree the management company is not liable for their actions. It's ridiculous. And who's really writing this? It's the attorney trade groups, they're representing the developer in theory right now, but they're really setting this up for future benefits for themselves, not for the developer. Why would they want to immunize the management company? If the management company goes and does stuff, why shouldn't the homeowner have an action against the management company for doing that? And these things are buried in these restrictive covenants that are, you know, tens or hundreds of pages long.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to see them. It's not apparent. And it's contrary to what you would expect to see in something. You know, you have certain expectations when you go buy some property. Like, you know, you wouldn't have expected transfer fees. That's a new concept. Or fining or some of these other strange thing. And so it's kind of like driving. You know, you're on automatic pilot for a good part of the time. You don't expect to see a flying saucer, you know, rolling, or an airplane or something rolling on the highway next to you. It's just not it's not something you expect to encounter or need to anticipate planning for. And so, you know, that's the problem with a lot of these contracts. And I do think that the federal government could play a role in that. And basically just declaring a bunch of this stuff, you know, hogwash, doesn't apply, because of the huge role that the federal government plays in financing.
You know, you're told that you agree to it, but what you're describing, and yeah, they're the size of phone books, old phone books. I don't know if they still make them in big cities. You know, that were 2 or 3 inches deep, thick. And you've got, in Virginia, you've got 72 hours to back out of the contract without losing your earnest money deposit. But nobody's going to read through that. And nobody's going to say, oh, you agreed to that. Oh, yeah, I see that. Yeah, okay, I'm going to hold everyone harmless. They can do anything they want. And that's nonsense.
Well, and even worse, like I said, in the developer-controlled ones in particular, you buy, but they have the unilateral right to amend the restricted covenants after you purchase.
Yeah.
And that happens quite frequently. That's, you know, there's plenty of examples around here where people bought property, and a decade later, the developer imposes a transfer fee requirement that if they sell, they have to pay a transfer fee to a management company or to some other, you know, to some mysterious foundation that nobody can get records on. You know, this kind of nonsense. It doesn't do any good, even if you see it, if it can be changed without your permission or consent after the fact.
Well, that's where the declarant can do that, but even if the declarant is gone, And you've got the HOA. So many HOAs think they are all-powerful and they can do anything they want. There was an article in the Washington Post recently about a guy who ended up spending $33,000 in court,
right,
because the association, the board, decided that they were going to force everyone to replace their mailboxes with these $500 mailboxes.
Right. It was actually over $60,000, and the point was is that would have bought mailboxes for the whole subdivision. But Shu, he's out the money. I mean, yes, he proved his point, but who got paid in that? The HOA attorney got paid,
and the
homeowner's attorney got paid, but the homeowner's out $60,000-something. How is that helping the equity in your house or preserving property value? I mean, how do you pay X dollars for property, and then you have to pay out all this other money because of a absurd HOA, and then you go sell your property? Well, X minus Y is not X. You know?
No, it's absolutely, you're absolutely correct. And the reason he did that was because he knew that the board was acting outside the scope of its authority. And so many of these lawsuits by HOAs have been lost because they're acting ultra vires. It doesn't sound like the HOA attorney either knows what he's doing, but obviously he must have advised them. And he's now saying, oh, well, we can't do it the way we did it, but we're just going to have to find a different way of getting where we need to go. The fact is that that's a covenant, and you can't have a rule that oversteps a covenant. You know, there's a hierarchy here. And,
right.
Bill, why is it that these attorneys can give such crappy advice all the time? Get paid.
Somebody else has to pay for it. They get paid for giving the advice, and then they get paid.
But they get
for
picked up. Why are they never? I mean, isn't that malpractice? Can they be sued for malpractice? But, I would.
Yeah, but the problem, Shu, is guests are the only person that can, at least in this state, which is the only one I'm can talk about on this topic. In this state, there's no derivative cause of action for the nonprofit, so the members can't sue. The only entity that can sue the attorney for the malpractice, the HOA attorney, is the HOA entity itself, which that means the board members that are on the HOA would have to go after the HOA attorney, and they often benefit from the HOA attorney's advice. Yeah, I mean, I've seen plenty of these where these people really enjoy sending threats to people. They enjoy it. That's what they're in business to do, and the HOA attorney has enabled them to do that. In many cases for many years. And they're not going to go, you know, that guy's their friend. He's their personal agent as far as they're concerned. And they are not paying any penalty personally for his bad advice. So, I mean, that's just my take on it. And that's one reason why it's a problem.
Well, in Virginia, it says that the winner, the prevailing party, is entitled to reasonable fees and costs. I'm not sure that is the part of the law in Maryland where this case is. So it ended up costing the homeowner the money.
Right.
But again,
and what's he supposed to do?
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't want them coming and making him take off his solar panels because, you know, he put up solar panels. And they were fining everybody $100 a day for not jumping up and putting in these $500, you know, their taste. It was their that's the other thing. They're forcing their taste on you.
Right.
They're forcing you to put something that they like. You may think it's just the most ridiculous thing on earth, but they're going to make you do it because, hey, it's their taste. And they think they've got the power.
I have found that most of the time that's the management company and the aligned HOA attorney's primary, agenda is to try and create more restrictions so that they can then claim violations of the restrictions. So that generates, you know, that then they allege fines are owed. And then the management company claims, well, you didn't pay the fine. Now you owe a late fee.
even though no money was laid out or anything else like that. Or if you pay your assessment, they directly misapply it to the fine and then claim that the management company is entitled to a late fee because you didn't pay your assessment. And it just continues to go downhill. It's a circular financial death spiral for the homeowner, all caused by the HOA and the vendors that feed off of it.
Bill, you are, as always, marvelous. Would you believe?
Well, thanks, Sue. I enjoyed talking to you today.
I always enjoy having you on. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We are out of time. Thanks, everyone.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.